Okay, let's see if we can coordinate the audio and the video. I want to say a few words about Rosh Hashanah for Mishpachas Stefanski this time of the week, and thank them for their support, and I'll get right down to it. Rosh Hashanah is around the corner. That's why I'm doing this, because Chodesh Elul. I hope to have a few things to say on the subject of Rosh Hashanah, but first let's deal with the basics. I don't want to go too long today, so when I get to a certain point, we'll call this part one, I suppose. But of course, as we know from the very beginning, well, my attention was drawn to the fact that I saw something here which stimulated my thinking to talk about this now. And, you know, we say, of course, Tikkun B'Chodesh Shofar B'Kesel Yom Chageinu, that the pasuk that talks about, however obliquely, talks about blowing the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, refers to it as a kesel. The reason I say obliquely is you and I know, nowhere in the Chumash does it say that thou shalt blow the shofar in Rosh Hashanah. When it says utkatem shofar, that's talking about Yovel, okay? Which is not Rosh Hashanah. But the Gemara, back and forth, Zera Shabbos and all that stuff, says, talking about Rosh Hashanah. All it says in the Chumash is Yom Teruah Yelechem. I've made this point many times. Teruah doesn't necessarily mean blowing a shofar. Teruah means a lot of different things. It's a vague word, has many possible meanings. To tell you the truth, I don't think blowing shofar will be the first thing I would think of when it comes to Teruah. But whatever the case is, as we know, that's how it goes. On the other hand, it's Bekese, which literally, if you look like in a regular translation, a non-Jewish translation, it'll say blow the shofar, tikka b'chod the shofar, blow the shofar on the new month, Bekese liyom chagenu, and in its appointed time on the day of our holiday, but we translate it Eze Chag Shachodesh Miskasaba Habi Rosh Hashanah. So we say, blow the shofar, reading the article here, on the moon's renewal at the time appointed, okay, good, for a festival day, but it can also be interpreted as Miskasaba from the word Kisoy, covering up, and that means blow the shofar at the moon's renewal on our festival, when the moon is covered. So that means Eze Chodesh Chodesh Miskasabo. When do you find a Jewish holiday where the moon is covered? That have to be a moon of Rosh Chodesh. The only holiday we have is Rosh Chodesh, because you know the lunar cycle is such that by the time you get to Rosh Chodesh, until then the moon has disappeared, till it renews itself very thinly, as we know. Unlike the other holidays, which are in the middle of the month and the moon is full, or something like that, you know, Pesach, the biblical holidays, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Pesach, and so forth. Even Shavuos is a weekend. Rosh Hashanah, of course, is on the very beginning. Ezechosh Miskasabo, so that'd be Rosh Hashanah. That is seen as a kind of a midrashic reference to Rosh Hashanah, which therefore describes it as somehow being hidden, okay? Now, that's very intriguing, and it's given a great deal of impetus to Jewish homiletic thought, agadic thought, midrashic thought, and it goes in a lot of different directions. At the basic level, the Chumash doesn't, the Rosh Hashanah is hidden, it's miskaseb, as I've made the point, I'm sure, in the past, because nowhere in the Bible does it say that the first day of Tishrei is the beginning of the year. It just says, B'chodeshi Bechav L'chodesh, in the first day of the seventh month, which sounds like it's not the beginning of the year. And as you know, if you believe that the world is created in Nisan, which is many, Rosh Hashanah is not the beginning of the year. The world is created in Nisan. I know how they try to reconcile it, but I'm just saying, if you're going straight forward on this, nowhere does it say in the book of Bereishis that it's created in Tishrei. And therefore, the whole theme of Rosh Hashanah, which is not mentioned in the Chumash, it just says in the first day of the seventh month, you offer up certain sacrifices. So it's obviously, and it's a holiday, so there was some kind of a festival in the first day of the seventh month. We associate that with being identical with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Teruah Yelechem, and that's why shofar is blown on Rosh Hashanah. Again, Rosh Hashanah doesn't appear anywhere except in the Mishnah, until the Mishnah. You won't find in Tanakh a reference to Rosh Hashanah, except you find a little bit in the book of Nehemiah. Okay, so that's a something of a backup. A little bit, okay? Where they're all crying, so it had to be, you see something in terms of contrition, remorse. They must have said something on that first day of the seventh month in Nehemiah. And however it is, you're working backwards. Now, therefore, in Jewish homiletical thought, in Midrashic thought, Nagadic thought, there's a lot of preoccupation with what is Rosh Hashanah miskaseh, covered up. To jump right into the heart of it, well, let me deal with the basics here. So where comes the idea that Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah? And more importantly, that Tishrei is Epis something anyway. The best you come, let's say you hold that the world is created in Nisan straight out. So then you have the question, what's the story with this holiday to unite Rosh Hashanah? It's not necessarily a problem with the day we call Yom HaKippurim, provided you read the Chumash in a certain way, which I think people not Jewish probably don't read it that way because it doesn't have to be read that way. So let me bring out my rusty, trusty Chumash here. And if you go to Ki Sisa, just before Lamed Beis, Perek Lamed Beis, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu gets the Ten Commandments, the tablets, after 40 days and 40 nights. So I think we know that the Ten Commandments are pronounced, what you and I call Shavuos, whether it's the fifth or sixth or seventh, but I mean that time of the year in Sivan. And then Moshe goes up in 40 days and 40 nights, and he's getting the physical tablets. And then it says, and then God gives him, up in the mountain, two tablets. Meanwhile, downstairs, the story in Shmos goes on to say that they make a golden calf. Okay? And meanwhile, Moshe is still up on the mountain with the two tablets. And then, so it says, they started parting with the golden calf that they just made. And meanwhile, Moshe Rabbeinu is up on the top of the mountain. And God says to him, Lech rei, ki shichei samcha asher alisa me'eretz Mitzrayim. That go down, they already made a golden calf downstairs, they become corrupted. Etc. God says, I'm angry at them. And let me wipe them out here and now. And you, Moshe, will be the progenitor of the new people. And we all know that Moshe doesn't do this. This is his finest hour, where he passed up opportunity to be the Mosaic people. Don't do it. Zechor l'Avram. It's a few psukim. And then, so God changed his mind and said, I'm not going to kill him. This happens on Shavuot Bar Thomas, before Moshe even goes down from the mountain, according to the story in Shmos. Okay? And then Moshe, once he already got the message from Hashem that he's not going to kill everybody, then he goes down and breaks the tablets. Right? That's the story. And so forth and so on. Excuse me. Now, and, you know, that's basically it. You know, he tells the people you've done a big sin. And Vayosha Moshe Onachata Amasachata Gedola. And please, you know, forgive them. And Hashem says, okay, but I'm not going to go myself. I'll send a Malach. It's all in Ki Sisa. And so on and so forth. And Moshe prays here to have God come himself. It's not even true. Moshe says, tell me how you operate. I can't believe that you forgave everybody. And if you want to go like Rashi, I don't understand how you operate. He says to God, why do the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper? Tzadik v'ro l'rosh tovlob. And Hashem says, you can see my back and not my face. That's the account you have over here. So nothing about Rosh Hashanah. Everything I just told you happened Shabbos HaBatamas. And maybe the day later. And that's the end of the story. Now, on the other hand, when you go to Parshas Ekev in Devarim, the story is told at greater length with more details, sort of. And it says over here, in Parshas Ekev, where would it be? I'm looking at the art scroll here. Uh, 986 probably. Here you go. Moshe is recounting to them as he does in Dvarim. And he says, Ubechorev, Hiksavtim as Hashem, by Yisem by Lashmi and Hashem. You got angry at Mount Sinai, wanted to kill you. Balosi, Harla, Kachas, Luchas, Avonim, Luchas, Abris. It was when I went up on the mountain. And I was, Baisha Bahar, Arbon, Yom, Barbim, Loyla, Lechem, Lachalti, Mayim, Losha, Sisi. So I was up there all that time, and I finally came down with the tablets. Miketz, Arbon, Yom, Barbim, Loyla. This is Moshe talking in Ekev, in Perek Tes, if you're interested. Vayim, Hashem, Eli, Kum, Reid, Maher, Mizeh, Shichas, Amcha. And God said, go down, they made a golden calf, and I'm going to kill everybody. And Moshe says, Vayim, Reid, Menahar, Vahar, Boi, Boesh. I came down from the fiery mountain with the tablets in my hand, and I saw Chatesa Mashal. I saw you made a golden calf, and I destroyed it and smashed it, and this and that and the other. And then what? And then it says here, Bless now, Paul of Hashem, Karishon, Arboim Yom, Arboim Loila, Lechem Ochalti, Mailush, Azizi. And I went up, what seems to be for another 40 days and 40 nights, to beg God for forgiveness. So here you see the idea, which you don't see in Kisisa, that Moshe goes up a second time, 40 days and 40 nights, without eating or drinking. Al kol chataschem asher chatasam Hashem, right? Because all your sin that you did, the golden calf. Ki agartim afachem, I was afraid that God would destroy you, etc., etc., etc. V'aron isan Hashem azeh, and I destroyed the golden calf, and so on and so forth. Okay? And then Moshe goes on to say that it's all in Dvarim, in Ekev. Ubisave Rov, Masav, Kivras, Ataiva. And there are other times that you got angry and rebelled against him. Uvishloach Hashem, Mikodesh Barnea, Alushos, and the Maraglib. Mamrim, hey, send me Hashem. You've always been rebellious since I know you, Moshe says. Vesnapalafne Hashem, Arboim Yom, Vesnapal, Lashay, Snapalti. Right? And I went up for another 40 days and 40 nights. Which, to be perfectly honest, sounds like it took place after the Meraglim, which is a different occasion. But we interpret it to mean what I just told you before, which is that he goes a third time to pray, etc., etc. And, you know, Hashem said, and God said, I'll give you the tablets, the second tablets, the Luchos Shniyos. So we read this like a continuous narrative, even though it's all over the place in the Chumash. I'm trying to show you why it's Keseh. It's not clear at all that this is Rosh Hashanah. It's not even clear at all how this relates to the story of Egel Ezov. However, it seems that the third time he went up for 40 days. It culminated in Yom HaKippurim, what you and I call Yom HaKippurim. And he gave him the second tablet. So that when he says, that's not Paul, then I went and threw myself up, davening a third time, not a second time. If it's a little confusing, that's okay, because that's my point. And then he goes on to describe the second tablets. So the way we in Judaism stitch the stories together, part in Kisisa, part in Ekev, part in Shmos, part in Dvarim, is like different supplementary pieces of a single narrative. And it's 40-40-40. The first 40 was after Shavuos, culminating on Shavuos of Atamos, where Moshe is getting the first tablets, no eating and drinking. The second time is to pray that they shouldn't get killed. And the third time seems to be the same thing, because he says, Al tashri samcha menachlosra, and so on and so forth. So it doesn't sound like he's adding anything. And a person would say, Moshe was just repeating himself, because Dvarim, if you take it at plain value, is rhetorical. So a lot of times Moshe says the same thing over. It has that quality to it. It's one long speech. And so he's Strassing, he's criticizing him again and again, like a parent can do, and repeat the same thing twice, but no, we don't say it that way. He's referring to three distinct times 40, and the last one starts on Rosh Chodesh Elul and concludes on 40 days later, and that's Salucho Shnei Luchos Avonik Rishonim. You're getting the tablets, the Luchos Shneos, and not long after this, in the book of Vayikra, Hashem says, that day, 10 days in Tishrei, let's make a Yom HaKippurim. And if you connect the dots, oh, that's when he forgave him for the golden calf and give the second Luchos. All right, I get it. That's why Yom HaKippurim does not explain why B'chodesh HaShi, B'echad L'chodesh, that there's some specialness about the first day of the seventh month, which is called Rosh Hashanah. And there are karbonos offered up that are different the rest of the year, and it says you can't do work and all that kind of stuff. So it doesn't say why. But Kesel Yom Chagenu. So the Etzem holiday itself is like covered up. And it's not described. A non-Jew reading this or a regular person reading this wouldn't come up with the conclusion that I just said, the Chazal say it, that it's 40-40-40. And you wouldn't have any reference to Rosh Hashanah whatsoever. It's even a shtickle stretch to say it's Yom Kippur because it doesn't say it's the 30th time. I mean the third time of 40. If you say it's the third time of 40 and do the numbers, then 3 times 40 from Shavuos gives you Yom Kippur. But if you don't, so why should 10 days in Tishrei be Yom HaKippurim? I'm trying to show you how the Chazal works backwards. You see? And we see it's Yom HaKippurim. Must be that was identical. The original Yom Kippur in terms of 40-40-40, then you look at Akev and you see how it works out. But that is something that requires what we call exegesis, right? Which means you're darshaning the psukim and arranging them a certain way, which is what we do. And then you see it says Yom Truah Yelachem, and it arises the way we interpret it. That's what I mean. That's Keset, hidden. So there are many other interpretations, but the Etzem holiday itself, as a Rosh Hashanah, as a Yom Adin, is not mentioned. Constantly it's Kesha. And its role in the narrative of 40-40-40 is definitely not mentioned. Doesn't seem to have a role. That's such a big problem that, as I told you, I think last year or 2 years ago, Duran in Rosh Hashanah suggests that maybe Moshe Rabbeinu, who was davening away day after day, minute after minute, which makes him a superhuman, began to discern a change in God's mood, kavyachol, on what you and I call the first day of Tishrei. And this began a slow cracking on the part of the judge, if you prefer, a slow cracking of the Midas Adin, which culminates in the total cracking of the Midas Adin 10 days later on Yom Kippur. So the beginning of that, Duran says, in Rosh Hashanah in the back, would be what we call Rosh Hashanah. It's a very nice shot. It's not for sure. He suggests it. I think he even says the word ulai. But it's a good shot, as we would say today. Okay? I would point out, and I'll tell you the truth, it never occurred to me that this is something interesting about Rosh Hashanah. Think of the following. Let's say Moshe Rabbeinu, and he comes down and he sees the Megillah Azov, and he smashed the tablets. And he already got from God the idea he's not going to kill everybody, but he hates them. And he goes up to Fadrei to Rabbeinu Shalom a cup and say, I'm going to keep dominating for 40 days until you change your mind, whatever. Now, the usual way of understanding it, although it does not say it in the Pesukim, is that the second 40 days was to get God to just not kill everybody. And the third 40 days is to get God to say, all right, we'll try to patch up the marriage as best we can. I don't want to have a cold relationship with Klal Yisrael. I want to have a warm one, even though the white elephant is on the table. The fact you did Egla Azov, is an act of Znus, Soto, and it's a historical record, and it'll always be there, which is why they say whenever misfortune happens, part of his Egla Azov, like a couple that's arguing, let's say there was a case of a couple, married couple, and let's say one or the other was did an act of infidelity. And let's say, for whatever reason, they patched it up. And let's say a couple years go by, no fights. And then a fight breaks out over a carpool. And let's say he was the one who did the act of infidelity. She's going to bring up the infidelity. And 5 years ago, you messed me up this way and that way in the center. 5 years, you didn't talk about it. But since you made him a problem with the carpool, it's going to come out. So it's always beneath the surface. So that's what we believe, that, you know, they go, something is always beneath the surface. The thing is, can we continue a relationship with the Almighty, even though it's there beneath the surface? And that's why it's considered poor taste on our part if you do kateger saneger, and the Kohen shouldn't wear gold and things like that, because why bring that up? It's like the guy would carry around the picture of his old girlfriend in the wallet. When you broke up with her, why bring that up? You understand? En kateger yasech saneger. That's what that means. So, but it doesn't say that in the Chumash. It says the second time, if it is the second time. He prayed, it's a bet's napel, it's ne Hashem. I threw myself arbim yom, arbim laila. And then, vayitin Hashem ilai es luchas avonim ksibetz elohim. No, I'm sorry. Lech reis kishiche samcha etzeis mitzrayim. For vei nichat Hashem Hashem gedulah. And he talks about the golden calf, and I was afraid. Okay, and he says in pasuk Yudches, "Ves napal v'nei Hashem korishona arbiyim arbiyim lo lechem lo chalti mali lo shesisi." So he went up to daven for them, and ki ogarti mitnei afa achem. I thought God would lashmin. I thought God would kill you, and I destroyed the golden calf. And he doesn't say, Hashem said, "I'm not going to kill you," even though in Kisisa, it mentioned that right away. And then in Pasuk Chaf Hey, I did a third time 40 days. So it doesn't sound from the Pasuk they simply tried to improve the relationship after the affair. But it sounds like that there was a danger of being killed. And Hashem says, I'll give you a second tablet. So what can I tell you? It is what it is, right? It is what it is. Out of all this, we put together the idea of 40-40-40. And out of all this, we notice the following. Because Moshe makes a point of saying in Dvarim, I went up for another 40 days and 40 nights, and I didn't eat or drink the whole time. And the third time, I went up for another 40 days and 40 nights, and I didn't eat or drink the whole time. That's interesting. Hashem says, Harif me menu, leave me alone. Don't far drink me a cup. And Moshe says, no, I'm going to keep davening, you know, like a good lawyer, until he gets what he wants. So first of all, it's a superhuman effort on the part of Moses. I mean, if you and I were pleading for something, and it wasn't working, and you continue pleading, and it's not working, after a while, you give up. Another day, enough. 40 days. It didn't stop. So either you say, I mean, I don't know, it just occurs to me, that Moshe, like a good attorney, was coming up with different arguments, right? Or you say, he was dominating like that, you know, with his eyes closed, and relying on passion of the prayer, and things of that nature, something like that. And in the end, it worked. But why didn't Moshe think, God does not want me to do this, and so I'm davening away for the Kal Yisrael, but Hashem didn't tell me to do this. In fact, the opposite. And the answer is, it seems to me, and I never thought about it till this year, all these two times, the second 40 and the third 40, he's living a miraculous existence where he doesn't eat and drink for 40 days. He makes a point of saying that. And so, how can that be unless God wills it that way? So if I'm Moshe Rabbeinu, and I start davening there, and let's say I have a strong constitution, after a day or two, I haven't eaten or drunk. After 3 days, I mean, it's a real sakana. In a desert. And I'm doing it. And now it's 4 days and 10 days and 20 days and I haven't eaten or drunk. And I'm managing it. Hashem must be empowering me to continue this prayer the way he empowered me in the first 40 days after Shavuos, when I went up in a happy mood to get the Torah to Lukos, the Rishonos, and I was living a miraculous existence. You see? And in that context, I knew I was finding divine favor by the very fact that I didn't have to eat or drink. Okay? Didn't have to eat or drink. Even the Rambam says people who have real dveikus can do that, even though the Rambam says only Moshe Rabbeinu could do it. Okay, fine. As opposed to the Mikabal and the Mesil Shams, anybody could do it, but you don't have to eat or drink. So my point is, now I'm on the second 40, and now I'm on the third 40, and I'm finding that I don't eat or drink. Hashem must want me to keep this up. Otherwise, I would have fainted from hunger or something like that. Even if Moshe had the strongest constitution, like 10 Marines, after a while, you physically give out. Physically give out. And it doesn't seem like he even went to sleep. So if I'm up in Shemayim in some spiritual way, and he was up in a mountain, and I am concentrating on talking to Ribbono Shel Olam, however that works, and I'm finding that I'm able to do it, I see the judge really wants me to do it. Instead, even though it seems like I'm pleading for a lost case, but the judge is empowering me to do it. Otherwise, I would have fainted. I would have passed. I would have died. And so you get mixed messages. He's addressing the Midas Adin, if you permit me to use that language. But meanwhile, he's getting winks from the Midas HaRachman. And the winks from the Midas HaRachman is the fact that he's not eating and drinking and he's making it. So this becomes Bakes Liyom Chagenu, the concept that Rosh Hashanah and the Jewish religion is very variegated, as I always say. It's a day of dim, it's also a day of shtick. You understand? For example, you blow the shofar to confuse the satan, however you interpret that. That shouldn't be even right. If it's Yom HaDin, it's Yom HaDin. You know? If I'm a teacher, I give you the grade you earned. Nothing more, nothing less. If you got 100 on the midterm and 100 on the final, I may hate your guts. I'm giving 100. I'm giving A+. If you get a 10 on the final and a 10 on the midterm, I'm giving an F. Even if you're nice, that's Midas HaDin. And yet we find that the judge is doing shtick, blow the shofar, confuse the satan. There are other things we do along these lines. Teshuvah v'fil tzedakah ma'avirim ra'ah gezeirah. A little bit late for that. No, it's not. And anyway, even if it's a case, excuse me, where you don't do well in the din, you got another 10 days to appeal and fix it. Tluyim v'om din, right? Ad Yom Kippurim. If you're Kabbalistic, even past that. These are tricks and shticks to say it is Yom HaDin. On the other hand, to a degree, the fix is in if you know how to manipulate the system, right? It's not fair, meaning if you're going by what's right and what's wrong, academically, we talk about a tzaddik having this and a Russia having that. It ain't so pashut, right? It ain't so pashut. And therefore, Bakes Liyom Chagenu partakes of all this. That it's a Yom HaDin, but it's hidden. It's weird. It's not clear to us. Right? Because even Moshe says, as I read you in Shmos, you forgave us this. What's the system? I thought I'm pleading a hopeless case to the principal that the kid got a 10 on the midterm and he got a 10 on the final. And I'm asking for him to get an A. And he gets an A. Right? And I know the principal is a pretty fair guy. So what's the tzich do? Hodieni nos drachecha. Hareni nos kvodecha. And Hashem, like the principal, says, it's none of your business. Right? Now, he might say like this, you can see my back and not my face. If I wanted to use this, if I were giving a sermon, I'd say, this kid who he passed in high school could be, I think they see Einstein flunked math, if I'm not mistaken, in high school. I think so. So don't see my face, see my back. Give it 20 years and you see Einstein will be the number one mathematician physicist. And Hashem said, I can see the future, so I knew what I was doing by passing him. That's one way of approaching it, right? That's one way of approaching it. But the basic concept of how the Yom HaDin works is not really a regular Yom HaDin. Now, as opposed to everything I just said, you have the Bali Musar throughout the ages who stress, don't take it for easy ride. Malachim bo yichafezon, b'chilon chavim, mi'amun lefanecha b'din, al tavoba mishpati manu kilo yitzdak lefanecha kol choy. You have that dynamic as well. It's every little thing, you know, all these statements, they go against that. So what am I supposed to do? How do I understand Rosh Hashanah? It's a kess. It's hidden. We operate in certain tried and true, you know, ways, but it's hidden. I went a little bit long. So let's call this part one for Mishpacha Svanskin. I hope I'll remember where I left off, and maybe we can continue this very interesting theme on what does it mean to Rosh Hashanah is a Yom HaDin and Keseh as it is played out in classic Jewish Agadic literature, Midrashic literature, and Drush literature, at least the parts that I like, anyway. So, as always, I thank Mishpacha Stefanski for their sponsorship, and I guess with that, let's wish everybody, they should have a good Elul, and we'll call it a day.